put up fencing to keep the cows out as part of the agreement. The Bureau of Land Management said, no, we're not going to follow that law. And they told a rancher they had to build a fence. I networked with my Democrat colleague, Mr. DeFazio from Oregon, who was part of writing this law. I said, Peter, you remember that, right? He said, yeah, I didn't like it, but that was the case. BLM still wouldn't listen. So we continued to push it. And they argued back. Well, it turns out there had been a second rancher who brought this to my attention, who they were telling had to do the same thing, build a fence, when the government was supposed to, under the law I wrote. The agency, the arrogance of the agency, was such that they said, we don't agree with you. Now, there aren't many times, Mr. Speaker, in this job when you can say, I know what the intent of a law was. But in this case, I could because I wrote the law. I knew the intent. Oh, that wasn't good enough. No. The arrogance of these agency people was such that we had to go to the archives and drag out the boxes from 2000, when we wrote this law, from the hearings that had all the records for the hearings and the floor discussions to talk about the intent. Do you understand how frustrated I am at this? Can you imagine how the people on the ground feel? If you're not there, you can't. You ridicule them. Let's have fun with this. This is not a laughing matter from any consequence. Nobody's going to win out of this thing. This is a government that has gone too far for too long. Now, I'm not condoning this takeover in any way. I want to make that clear. I don't think it's appropriate. There's a right to protest. I think they've gone too far. But I understand and hear their anger.
That was Oregon Representative Greg Walden speaking on the floor of Congress today, responding to criticisms of armed militia members who have occupied the headquarters of a wildlife refuge in Harney County, Oregon.
As the takeover of the wildlife refuge by anti-federal government protesters continues in eastern Oregon for the fifth straight day, members of a Native American nation have taken issue with the idea that the federal lands should be, quote, returned to its rightful owners, unquote. The Burns Paiute tribe said in a press conference this morning that if the white militia is serious about returning the land to its rightful owners, they, the members of the Paiute Nation, are ready to take it back. In the meantime, the entire Burns community is feeling besieged by the occupation and all of the media attention. KBOO's Paul Rowland spoke with Jessica Campbell, organizing director of the Rural Organizing Project, and is currently in Burns, about how the community is dealing with the situation.
We are, at our core, at the Rural Organizing Project, a network of autonomous human dignity groups throughout the state. What our role has been is to really jump in and support the community however we can in really bringing together a collective voice. What is happening right now in Burns is exactly what happened in Josephine County, where folks come in with an outside-in agenda around a situation that is very thinly veiled, thinly related, and they use this opportunity to put their media expertise to work. And who ends up losing is the community. The community often doesn't have the same access to resources or expertise around media work. And so we've really supported community around how are we going to build some kind of collective presence that makes it clear that multiple people are here and are totally ready for this to be over with. Folks are ready for their lives to go back to normal, want their children to go back to school. You know, there's a real pattern that is emerging. This isn't the first time that this kind of situation has happened in rural Oregon. Back in April, there was a similar situation that was called around a gold mine down in Josephine County, and folks from outside of the state came in and formed an encampment and stayed there for a month, and the community was terribly frightened and really divided about what to do. And it really became clear just how extensive the crisis is in rural Oregon. The economic crisis has really resulted in the defunding of public infrastructure so significantly that folks were struggling for the most basic access to public safety. I mean, even 911 dispatch wasn't 24 hours, and that's true in several places across the state. They only had one sheriff's deputy at one point, and there were hours where there wasn't sheriff's deputy coverage, so they had to rely on state troopers. So in that moment in April, it became really clear just how extensive rural Oregon's destabilization has been in terms of its community infrastructure. So what we're seeing right now, as this story in Burns is making national headlines, the silver lining is that it's finally getting some attention, just how bad off rural communities are in Oregon right now. It's to the point where folks are struggling to have decent schools to bring their kids to, where children actually learn. Public transportation is almost completely gone in rural communities out here. Broadband internet doesn't exist in many rural communities. The ability for folks to be able to communicate with each other, I mean, in many parts of the state, even phone lines are so degraded that those aren't reliable. So we're just in such a moment where some of that is starting to get some airtime. That is what we're really hoping for coming out of this, is that we can, you know, this is actually a real distraction from the real woes of Harney County, particularly right now, where these ranchers and the Bundy family have come in and said that this is a situation that they're helping. They're helping the community while the schools are closed all week and folks are having to stay home to take care of their children. The schools are closed, the police are working overtime, and of course that's coming out of the county budget. We're really seeing folks really dig into what does this moment mean.
It seems like, you know, these people, obviously they are outsiders and there probably is a fair amount of resentment, but they, you know, are also clearly tapping into a lot of frustration. And, you know, I'm sure there's people whose, you know, ideological perspective or social perspective overlaps to a fair degree with what they're saying. And I know there have been local people who've actually gone in there and met with them. And of course, it all was sparked off by two, you know, a local ranching family that, you know, had been in a conflict with the Bureau of Land Management, other federal authorities over the years. What sense do you have about how do people view the conflict they have had with the federal authorities? What are people's feelings about the underlying issue that sparked all this off?
Feel like it was already a tough situation, for sure. Folks know the Hammonds, have lived near the Hammonds, and folks now who are living next to the refuge feel that this has gotten personal very quickly. And the bottom line really is here that what happened to the Hammonds, and we believe this too at ROP, is actually wrong. You know, what ended up happening is they were charged with terrorism, a terrorism charge that was meant for domestic, I mean, it was passed after the Oklahoma City bombing, what they were charged under. And it was actually a mandatory minimum that got them in the end to where they had to go back to prison. And we strongly come out against mandatory minimums because they do not allow juries and judges to be the ultimate decision maker about the severity of the crime that was committed and the severity of the punishment. And so what this situation involves is a mandatory minimum of 5 years. The Hammonds went and served a lesser sentence because the original judge and jury decided a lesser sentence made sense for the crime. And then the U.S. attorney went back and appealed that. You know, this is a situation where there's actually some substance to people's really honest and sincere concerns for their neighbors. And we actually agree that what's happening to the Hammonds isn't fair and isn't appropriate. But nonetheless, the folks who are out here right now at the refuge, they are out here based on federal land. They are out here on an agenda that has nothing to do with the local family. It has nothing to do with the local community. This is about their own agenda. And I mean, even the Hammonds themselves came out saying that they didn't want this to happen. They promised these groups, they came out and they held a community forum where they promised the community that there would be no civil disobedience, that they would come in and they would leave. And that has been the opposite of what has happened. So this so clearly has so little to do with the Hammonds, and that is how folks in the community feel as well. It was a thinly veiled excuse to come in and make national headlines.
But again, I mean, there some of these underlying fault lines, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Obviously, these are very real problems that the people in these communities are facing. And, you know, I don't know about there. I don't know how much like logging has to do with there, but, you know, some of the structural changes in the, you know, economies of Western states have really hit some of these communities hard. Obviously, the changes in the logging industry, you know, obviously each area is different, but there's these underlying issues. It's not just urban versus rural, but it's, you know, how people relate to, say, these land management agencies, you know, how people relate to just different ways of dealing with the land. And obviously the conflict that the Hammonds got into was over the way they were relating to the federal land management agencies. So I'm sure there's, again, some overlap in terms of how the worldview of the Hammonds vis-a-vis, you know, the federal government and some of these other groups. I'm just sort of wondering what kind of discussions are going on about this. I guess maybe this is making people think perhaps a little more about, you know, some of these issues.
You know, folks out here and folks across rural Oregon are struggling because their economies were based on resource extraction. And whether that was mining, whether that was logging, whether that's ranching, whether it's, you know, whatever it may be. And certainly out here in Harney County, I was just sitting down with a local who was telling me that Harney County was one of the most prosperous spots in the state because of the logging industry. And I know that my hometown of Cottage Grove, it is the same story there of our glory days were the logging days. And what we're seeing right now is we don't have any real economic engines in rural Oregon that can bring thriving economies back. So folks really are struggling. And that is really at the heart of this issue, is that folks are desperate and folks are struggling to feed their families. Folks are working multiple minimum wage jobs in order to get by. You know, there's very limited access to mental health care. If you are a veteran, VA services are very difficult to get a hold of, very difficult to travel to, long ways. So the reality here is that folks are struggling, and I think that there is something really appealing to folks around the idea of opening up federal land and privatizing it. The thing about it, though, is it does have such well-developed talking points by folks who are driven by resource extraction industries that once we have conversations about what would it actually mean if we were to privatize all of this federal land, and that is what the Bundy family out at the refuge are right now saying is one of their demands, you know, what that actually means is either the federal land gets turned over to the state, and the state doesn't necessarily have the best mechanisms to handle that, and it gets privatized, or it gets privatized immediately, or opened up, at least, to extractive industries. So what we end up with is, instead of maintained, beautiful BLM and Forest Service land, we actually see timber sales that involve clear cuts, and we see mining taking and fracking. You know, this opens the door to fracking as well.
Is there gas?
Multiple layers here of folks are desperate, and folks are also really hesitant. They love the beautiful places that they live and are hungry for an economy that actually serves them, and extraction isn't it.
It's obviously hard for people in the metropolitan areas that are most of our listeners to really understand those things. So I really appreciate your putting that out. So where do you think it's going to go from here? It sounds like there's a lot of stuff that's sort of being opened up, a lot of attention that's being put on this. Mm-hmm. Where do you see taking this? You know, where do people want to see this go? I mean, obviously they want to see this end first and foremost.
The bottom line in the community is that folks feel like they're being attacked. They feel like they're constantly being held hostage by the situation that is going on here. And folks are just really hungry to go back to how things were. You know, folks across the county have reiterated to me multiple times how they, despite political differences, despite religious differences, despite different races and language backgrounds and where they grew up and where they came from, their livelihoods, whatever, folks were really able to come across differences and be friendly to each other, even if they disagreed. And that has been the bottom line of Burns for so many folks here. And this is a moment where I was just sitting down with someone who said, I would love for things to go back to normal. I would like for things to go back to how they were before, but after this, I don't think they will. And that just really resonated with me, what it means to love your community so deeply and to know it has been damaged, your ability to relate to each other. I talked to a faith leader who said that when someone walked into their congregation the other day, people were suspicious, when normally they'd be hopping up and welcoming them. And that is just has such an impact on the complete, the entire community and how folks relate to each other. So that alone, who knows how that is going to turn out, but folks are really committed to trying to get back there, to becoming a welcoming community once.
That was KBOO's Paul Ryan speaking with Jessica Campbell, Organizing Director of the Rural Organizing Project, currently in Burns, Oregon, speaking about the current takeover by the militia of the wildlife refuge there.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Nacho Drum, showing Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. Released in 1993, Nacho Drum is a French documentary about the Romani people's journey from Northwest India to Spain, consisting primarily of music. Again, that's Nacho Drum, Thursday, January 21st, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.